Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Wednesday, June 24th, 2020. This is Section A, the front page. The headline reads, A&M, Local Home Inventory Jumps, Sales Fall, by Stuart Doreen. The number of houses on the market in Midland County continues to climb. The Texas A&M Real Estate Center reports the number of available houses at the end of May climbed to 885, which was 82 more than April, and the highest number since the Real Estate Center began keeping statistics in 2015. Months of inventory also increased to 4.1, which tied the high set in July and August of 2016. The report also shows a two-month continuation in the dropping of price metrics. The first was that the average home sold for $321,339, which was a decline of nearly $16,000 compared to April, and a drop of nearly $30,000 compared to May 2019. The median price for a home sold in May, $285,000, dropped more than $19,000 month over month and year over year. Also, it was the lowest median price in May going back to 2017. The number of homes sold in May, 156, followed similar trends. The Texas A&M Real Estate Center reported 253 homes sold in May 2019 and 245 in May 2018. Data show that one has to go back to February 2016 to find a month when fewer homes were sold in a month. The Texas A&M Real Estate Center, in a report about home sales in May, stated, existing homes sold through Texas multiple listing services fell to their lowest level since 2012 amid public health precautions and social distancing measures. Texas's existing home sales plummeted 32% year over year on top of a 22% slide in April. James Gaines, chief economist for the Real Estate Center at Texas A&M University, said. The center's report also cites the National Association of Realtors, stating existing home sales across the country fell for the third consecutive month in May, slumping 27% year over year. The May housing report. Houses sold, 150. Total dollar volume, $48.2 million. Average sold price, $321,339. Median sold price, $285,000. Inventory at the end of the month, 885. Months of inventory, 4.1. This article is entitled, City, First Person in Nearly 3 Weeks Dies of COVID-19, from Staff Reports. The Midland Health Department reported that a male patient in his 60s became the 14th Midland County resident to die of coronavirus. The man who died Monday was being treated at Midland Memorial Hospital. He was the first coronavirus-related death involving someone from Midland County since June 2nd. That person was a male in his 80s. Of the 14 Midland County residents who have died, 8 have been male. The health department reported another 37 confirmed cases Tuesday, bringing the overall case count in Midland County to 454. The health department reports that 114 Midland County residents have recovered since the start of the pandemic. The 37 cases reported Tuesday are the largest non-weekend total. The second highest total was the 35 on Friday. Health department officials reported 95 on Monday, but 64 of those cases were from the weekend, officials said. 15 of the 37 cases involved residents in their 20s. That brings the total of 20-somethings who have tested positive for COVID-19 to 138, or 30.4% of the 454 confirmed cases in Midland County. The next highest total is 79 in the 30 to 39 age range, according to the health department. The number of cases reported this week increased to 132. The number of cases this month increased to 325. This article is entitled "Storms Create Power Outage in Grasslands" from Staff Reports. Close to 700 customers were without power in West Midland since Monday night, Tuesday morning, when storms blew through the Permian Basin. Oncor's website showed around 3 p.m. that the customers located in and around the Grasslands Estate Development, north of State Highway 191 and west of Loop 250. One person living in the area told the Reporter Telegram that Monday night's storm blew over power poles in the area. Oncor's website states equipment failure is the cause for the outage. The Oncor website stated the estimated time for restoration of power was unknown. Other areas without power in the Midland area included an area south of Midland city limits near County Road 140 and State Highway 349. Oncor reports 191 customers are impacted there. The estimated time for restoration was 8 p.m., according to the website. Oncor also reported an outage impacting 26 customers in Northeast Midland, east of Big Spring Street and north of Wadley Avenue, not far from Hogan Park. Oncor estimates restoration would be complete by 7 p.m. Tuesday. A storm dumped rain, some small hail, and pounded Midland with sustained winds reaching 45 miles an hour and gusts topping out at 60 miles an hour at Midland International Airport, according to the National Weather Service. The NWS also reported 0.38 inch of rain fell. It was the first rainfall of 1/10 of an inch or more at Midland International Airport since March 18th. This article is entitled "City: First Person in Nearly 3 Weeks Dies of COVID-19" from Staff Reports. The Midland Health Department reported that a male patient in his 60s became the 14th Midland County resident to die of coronavirus. The man who died Monday was being treated at Midland Memorial Hospital. He was the first coronavirus-related death involving someone from Midland County since June 2nd. That person was a male in his 80s. Of the 14 Midland County residents who have died, 8 have been male. The health department reported another 37 confirmed cases Tuesday, bringing the overall case count in Midland County to 454. The health department reports that 114 Midland County residents have recovered since the start of the pandemic. The 37 cases reported Tuesday are the largest non-weekend total. The second highest total was the 35 on Friday. Health department officials reported 95 on Monday, but 64 of those cases were from the weekend, officials said. 15 of the 37 cases involved residents in their 20s. That brings the total of 20-somethings who have tested positive for COVID-19 to 138, or 30.4% of the 454 confirmed cases in Midland County. The next highest total is 79 in the 30 to 39 age range, according to the health department. The number of cases reported this week increased to 132. The number of cases this month increased to 325. This is the local and state page. This article is entitled "Council OK's New Gathering Place for Washington Park" by Stuart Doreen. The Midland City Council approved appropriating up to $400,000 for a new multi-purpose building at Washington Park in Southeast Midland. City officials stated the building is the Midland Federation of Black Women's Clubhouse, commonly known as the White House, and is used as a community gathering place. It is similar to the Hispanic Cultural Center, Assistant City Manager Morris Williams Jr. stated in an email. There are events held there such as family reunions, community events, funeral repasts, and other similar events. City officials said Tuesday that renovation of the current building would cost more than replacing it with a modular building. The cost of the 3,192-square-foot modular building is $261,612. City staff expects it will take 4 to 6 weeks to complete. It will then be delivered and installed on an existing concrete slab. The contract was awarded to Palomar Modular Buildings of DeSoto. City staff also requested $13,080 for contingencies and $125,308 for demolition, site work, environmental studies, and other incidentals related to the project, according to city documents in the council agenda packet. This article is entitled, Ector County Reports 37 New Cases. Number of Probable Cases Continues to Rise, by J.C. Lewis. Ector County reported 37 new cases of coronavirus on Tuesday, bringing the total of confirmed cases to 396. The number of probable cases jumped 23 to 236. The Ector County Sheriff's Office reported that 7 inmates and 1 jailer at the Ector County Law Enforcement Center have tested positive, according to KOSA-TV's website. The Sheriff's Office announced last week that 2 inmates tested positive for coronavirus. The coronavirus-positive inmates are moved to quarantine cells until they are symptom-free for 72 hours. Hospitalizations in Ector County went down by 2 patients from 25 to 23 on Tuesday. 13 patients are currently in the ICU, and 5 patients are on ventilators. ECHD reported that 6,055 tests have been taken, with 4,712 negative tests and 947 pending results. Ector County has contact traced 2,728 people. This is the opinion page. This column is called Lack of Preparedness Began Long Before Trump, by Henry Olson, Washington Post. The novel coronavirus is pummeling the U.S. economy, but there's another threat to our economic health and our national security, the oil glut. President Trump needs to use his America First approach to solve this challenge. The world is awash in oil it doesn't want because of a price war between Russia and Saudi Arabia. Faced with increasing oil supplies from the fracturing boom in the United States and declining demand because of the COVID-19 pandemic, the two oil giants could not agree on which country would reduce their production to maintain the price. The Saudis then declared they would increase production to force the Russians to the table. The Russians quickly followed suit, and the price of oil plummeted by more than 50% during March. This is great news for drivers in the United States. The average price per gallon of regular unleaded fuel dropped to less than $2 a gallon by the end of March. But the low prices are killing U.S. oil producers. Nearly 2/3 of U.S. oil is produced by hydraulic fracturing. It is an efficient process, but is also expensive. The cost varies depending on the rock formation and other factors, but many fracked wells only turn a profit when global oil prices are more than $60 a barrel. Saudi and Russian oil, by contrast, is much cheaper to produce. Saudi Arabia is regarded as the world's low-cost producer, with costs as low as $10 a barrel. That nation's state-owned oil producer, Saudi Aramco, can still make money even at today's low prices. Russian oil is slightly more expensive, but it still costs less than $20 a barrel to produce and ship a barrel of oil in most parts of the country. Russia's increase in production helped drive down worldwide prices from around $60 a barrel at the end of January to around $26 today. Both countries' governments will take a fiscal beating as long as the price war continues, but their oil production companies will not go under. That's not true for U.S. companies, and that's why the oil war matters. Thanks to fracturing, the United States has become energy independent in recent years for the first time in decades. It no longer relies on oil imports from the Middle East and other global hotspots, and it has even become an exporter of both oil and natural gas. This has national security benefits, as the country no longer needs to be as concerned about maintaining the free flow of oil through the volatile Persian Gulf. It also has economic benefits, as jobs in oil production are typically high-paying and open to many people without college degrees. Trump understands the threat a collapse in U.S. oil production poses for the country. That's why he has become personally involved in negotiations to include U.S. producers in that push to cut global production. He has also offered to store excess oil in the government's strategic petroleum reserve so producers can park it cheaply now and make a profit when the market eventually rises. While some companies would surely suffer, the overall benefit to the industry would be massive. The president must continue to push for higher prices to secure U.S. oil production despite the fact that this will increase gasoline prices. The dramatic rise in fracked oil production is a significant factor in spreading the wealth from economic growth to many of the blue-collar workers who Trump has long championed. In many parts of the country, such as in Pennsylvania, fracturing undergirds the economy. Without Trump's support, they could be devastated by an oil depression. Oil and gas independence also holds enormous strategic benefits for the United States. It would no longer be held economically hostage in the case of a prolonged military conflict, and it would be freer to pursue a less Mideast-centric foreign policy. Maintaining that strategic flexibility is of crucial importance as the United States navigates its response to China's rise. If negotiations falter, Trump should threaten to impose tariffs on imported oil on national security grounds. This basis, on which he imposed tariffs on goods from China and other countries, and the danger to U.S. security, is much more pronounced from a rise in oil dependency than it is on the import of Chinese washing machines. Such a threat may be enough to push Saudi Arabia and Russia into serious discussions. This column is entitled, U.S. Needs to Make Nations Drugs, by Rich Lowry, King Features Syndicate. A country learns about itself in a crisis, and one revelation is in the coronavirus emergency is that we can't make our own penicillin. The first patient successfully treated with the antibiotic was a woman suffering from sepsis in a Connecticut hospital in 1942. Her treatment took up half the country's supply. Yet in short order, we figured out how to mass produce the medicine, saving the lives of countless soldiers in World War II. Once, factories throughout the country made the stuff. But that was a long time ago. The U.S. plant to make penicillin, a Bristol-Myers Squibb operation in Syracuse, New York, shuttered in 2004. What happened? According to Rosemary Gibson of the Hastings Center and author of the book China RX, industry data revealed that the Chinese companies formed a cartel, colluded to sell product on the global market at below market price, and drove all U.S., European, and Indian producers out of business. When the European firms tried to sell their penicillin ingredients in China, they got a characteristic Chinese welcome. The government, Gibson writes, imposed high trade barriers, charged astronomical fees for product testing, and held foreign firms to a higher standard than domestic ones. Just like that. It's not so easy to simply start up a penicillin fermenter. We were out of the penicillin production business. The story of penicillin is the tale of U.S. dependence on China-sourced pharmaceuticals and active drug ingredients writ large. From 2010 to 2018, U.S. imports of pharmaceuticals from China increased 75%. China is the second largest exporter of drugs and biologics to the United States behind Canada, and our dependence is even greater, given that China is the source of the active ingredients of many drugs produced elsewhere. India, another major source of drugs for the U.S., gets about 75% of its active ingredients from China. China is a dominant force when it comes to generic drugs in particular, which account for the vast majority of medicines that Americans take. We rely on China for 90% of our antibiotics and for drugs for everything from HIV/AIDS to cancer to antidepressants. China is fully aware of its leverage. It notoriously threatened via its state-run media to cut off our supply of drugs, except fentanyl, of course, and plunge the U.S. into the mighty sea of coronavirus. Even if China weren't a malign global competitor, it is. A remorseless dictatorship, it is. Or a dishonest kleptocracy, it is. There would be a risk inherent in having so many of our medications and their components coming from one country. We become vulnerable to any disruption of Chinese production, whether from disease, political unrest, or war. Beijing is a particularly nasty actor, but the coronavirus has demonstrated that even friendly nations will keep medical supplies from one another if it is in their self-interest to do so. It is only prudent, then, that the U.S. begin a national effort to produce more of its own medicines. It's not as though China's advantage in this area is the result of a policy of strict laissez-faire. The U.S.-China Economic and Security Review Commission attributes China's success to, quote, government subsidies, a robust chemical industry, IP theft, lax environmental precautions, and regulations favoring domestic companies, unquote. Unspooling supply chains that have developed over the course of the past two decades won't be simple. The U.S. should create every incentive for drug companies to at least move out of China into other foreign countries, and ideally come back here. Economic incentives clearly matter when drug companies lost tax preferences to manufacture in Puerto Rico, many of them left for China. Eventually, federally funded health systems, including Medicare, Medicaid, and the Veterans Administration, should buy only American-sourced pharmaceuticals. Prescient commentators have been warning of our growing dependence on China for medicine for many years. After this, there's no excuse for not fixing it.
Hello, this is April reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Wednesday, June 24, 2020. Masked Rabbit. Leslie Gillian from left, Monica Schauner, Odessa Arts Executive Director Randy Hamm, and Connection Christian Church Pastor Don Weeks placed masks on jackrabbit sculptures in downtown Odessa on Monday. Volunteers mask Odessa jackrabbits. Odessa. Odessa Arts, Discover Odessa, and Connection Christian Church have partnered to promote public health by masking the jackrabbit sculptures in downtown Odessa. Volunteers from Odessa Arts, Discover Odessa, and Connection Christian Church on Monday began covering the 38 jackrabbit sculptures to encourage the community to wear masks when out in public. The masks were designed by Connection Christian Church congregate Leslie Gillian and are being decorated this week by children at Connection Vacation Bible School. Volunteers plan to have all the jackrabbits masked by the end of next week. To see the sculptures, visit discoverodessa.org. Fan drive to benefit Meals on Wheels. Senior Life Midland is holding a fan drive 9 a.m. to noon Saturday at Lowe's. It will benefit Meals on Wheels and Homebound Services. Residents may purchase a fan or Lowe's gift cards. The preferred fan is Pilanus 3-speed oscillating fan, item number 826639, model number SF40-19M, according to a press release from the nonprofit. For more information, call Tracy Renton at 689-6693. Volunteer opportunities available. These select area volunteer opportunities and events are provided by MSS Connections, a program of MSS made possible by the Warren Charitable Foundation. For more information, visit www.mssconnections.org. Permian Basin Petroleum Museum needs volunteers for education assistant and office manager assistant and for admissions and museum store. Contact Mara Bland, mbland@petroleummuseum.org. American Red Cross is seeking a social media manager volunteer. Contact Stacy at 425-7637. Big Brothers Big Sisters Mentors. Background checks are required. Contact K. Kreitz at 687-0195. Midland Soup Kitchen, 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Monday through Friday, 1401 Orchard Lane. Breaking Bread Kitchen, 5 to 7 p.m. Monday through Friday, 410 East Florida Avenue. In Defense of Black Lives to Host Forum. In Defense of Black Lives is hosting an event 6 to 9 p.m. Thursday at Floyd Gwynn Park Gym, 1015 North County Road West in Odessa. The community forum will cover policing, education, and next steps to solutions, according to the press release. Space is limited because of social distancing. Reserving a spot is required. Those in attendance should wear masks. For more information or to RSVP, go to bit.ly/InDefenseForum. The event will be streamed via Facebook Live. Follow at InDefenseOrg to watch online. Today in history. Today's Wednesday, June 24th, the 176th day of 2020. There are 190 days left in the year. On this date, in 1947, what's regarded as the first modern UFO sighting took place as private pilot Kenneth Arnold, an Idaho businessman, reported seeing nine silvery objects flying in a weaving formation near Mount Rainier in Washington. In 1957, the U.S. Supreme Court in Roth v. United States ruled 6-3 that obscene materials were not protected by the First Amendment. In 1983, the space shuttle Challenger, carrying America's first woman in space, Sally K. Ride, coasted to a safe landing at Edwards Air Force Base in California. In 1992, the Supreme Court, in a 5-4 decision, strengthened its 30-year ban on officially sponsored worship in public schools, prohibiting prayer as a part of graduation ceremonies. 5 years ago, a federal judge in Boston formally sentenced Boston Marathon bomber Zokar Tsarnaev to death for the 2013 terror attacks. Alabama Governor Robert Bentley became the first Southern governor to use his executive power to remove Confederate banners, as four flags with secessionist symbols were taken down from a large monument to rebel soldiers outside the state capitol in Montgomery. Today's birthdays. Musician Mick Fleetwood is 73.
This is the obituary column, Wednesday, June 24th, 2020. Freda Louise Black. Freda Louise Black, 82, passed away peacefully on Sunday, June 21st, 2020, at her home in Midland, Texas. Freda was born December 16th, 1937, in Midland, Texas, to Benjamin and Martha Nobles Black. Ms. Black was preceded in death by her father, Benjamin F. Black, and her mother, Martha Nobles Black. She is survived by her two children, Martha Pennington and her husband, Keith, of Austin, Texas, Charlton Ben Haddon and his wife, Cynthia, of Chesterfield, Virginia, five grandchildren, one great-grandson, her sister, Betty Montgomery, and her husband, Dan, of Houston, her loving caregiver, Rosa Zuniga, a host of nieces, nephews, and other beloved family and friends. Due to the current circumstances, the immediate family will be having a small private memorial service on Thursday, July 2nd, 2020. In lieu of flowers, her family requests that memorials may be directed to the First Baptist Church of Midland, 2103 West Louisiana, Midland, Texas, 79701. Jimmy Dale, Jim Powell. Jimmy Dale, Jim Powell, passed from this life on June 21st, 2020 in Midland, Texas. Jim was born September 6, 1940 in Sesakwa, Oklahoma, to Nelvin Leon and Annie Farstein Powell. He spent his early years on the family farm in Oklahoma. Jim is survived by his wife Diane, daughter Robin Damron, Rodney, son Keith Powell, Joyce, brother Leroy Powell, Janet, cousin Betty Barton, Kenneth, six grandchildren and seven great-grandchildren, several nieces and nephews. He is preceded in death by his parents, brother Earl Powell, sisters Carolyn Hopkins and Peggy Cowan. Visitation will be Thursday, June 25th at 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. at Nellie Pickle & Wells Funeral Home and Crematory. Funeral services will be Friday, June 26th at 10 a.m. at Westside Church of Christ with Mike Vestal, minister officiating. Interment following at American Heritage Cemetery. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle & Wells Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Leo Hatfield. Leo Hatfield, 88, passed away on Saturday, June 20th, 2020, surrounded by his family. There will be a viewing from 6 to 8 p.m. Thursday, June 25th at Nellie Pickle & Wells Funeral Home. Funeral service will be held at 2 p.m. Friday, June 26th at Nellie Pickland Wells Funeral Home Chapel. Interment will follow at Fairview Cemetery. Leo L. Hatfield was born in Taylor County, Texas on January 19, 1932. He is preceded in death by his parents, Embry Lee Hatfield and Linny Dickerson, two brothers, Jesse Hatfield and Earl Boots Hatfield, daughter Allison Hatfield. He is survived by his son, Derek Hatfield, and his wife, Cecilia, their children, Josh and his wife, Megan, Jamie and his wife, Shalena, the love of his life, Loz Alvarado, and her daughter, Annalisa Nicole Alvarado. In lieu of flowers, memorial donations may be made to Hospice of Midland, 911 West Texas Avenue, Midland, Texas, 79701. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickland Wells Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Linda Bryce. Our special angel has left this life on earth. Linda Bryce, 73, passed peacefully away at home on June 17, 2020, with family at her side. Linda is survived by her husband, Ron of Midland, son, Randy of Midland, brothers Chuck Chanley, Norma of Hobbs, New Mexico, Rodney Chanley, Mary of Hobbs, New Mexico, and Ty Chanley of Eunice, New Mexico. Four grandchildren and son-in-law Steve Abels of Granbury. Other survivors include three great-grandchildren and cousin Toby Partridge, Diane of Greenwood, and nephew Chanley Delk, Heidi of Greenwood, plus many more nieces, nephews, and cousins. She is preceded in death by her parents, Earl and Lois Chanley, daughter Kimberly Ann Bryce Abels, brother Earl Chanley, sister Toby Delk, Aunt Pearl Finley, and great-granddaughter Reagan Mullinex. The family will receive guests from 6 to 8 p.m. on Wednesday, June 24th at Nellie Pickland Wells Funeral Home. Funeral service will be held at 12 p.m. Thursday, June 25th at Nellie Pickland Wells Funeral Home Chapel. Burial will follow at Rest Haven Cemetery at 1 p.m. with a reception to follow immediately after burial at the branch at NPW. The family would like to express their gratitude to Hospice of Midland and the many friends and relatives who supported us during her sickness. The family asks for any donations to go to Hospice of Midland, 911 West Texas Avenue, Midland, Texas, 79701. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickland Wells Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Margaret Marja Ruth Leonard. Margaret Marja Ruth Leonard went to be with her Lord and Savior on June 19, 2020, surrounded by her family. Graveside services will be 3 p.m. Wednesday, June 24th at Rest Haven Cemetery. Marja was born in Midland, Texas on June 25, 1936 to Ariel Dawn Smith and Mary Margaret Smith. Marja is survived by her son, Mark Leonard, and wife, Donna, granddaughter Amanda Dorsey and husband Cody, grandson Aaron Leonard and wife Megan, as well as three great-grandchildren, Coulter, Cooper, and Peyton Dorsey. Marja was preceded in death by her parents and a brother, Michael Don Smith. In lieu of flowers, memorial donations may be made to Alamo Heights Baptist Church at 1305 North Midland Drive, Midland, Texas, 79703, or a charity of your choice. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickland Wells Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Margaret Ann Rice Veal. Margaret Ann Rice Veal, born July 25, 1926, went to be with her Lord and Savior on Friday, June 19, 2020. The family will receive guests from 6 to 8 p.m. Thursday, June 25th at Nellie Pickland Wells Funeral Home. A graveside service will be held at 10 a.m. Friday, June 26th at Fairview Cemetery. The family is planning a memorial service around Margaret's birthday. She was predeceased by her parents, Reginald B. and Willie May Walker Rice, her husband of 56 years, H.M. Veal Jr., and her son-in-law, J. Foy McFaster III. She is survived by her children, Mildred and Cheryl Veal, Corin McMaster and Mitch Weir, David and Sharman Veal, and Sarah and Ivan Meissner. Her 9 grandchildren and 6 great-grandchildren, 1 great-granddaughter, her precious sister Margie Veal, many nieces and nephews, and many, many friends. In lieu of flowers, please make donations to Jews for Jesus, Cotton Flat Baptist Church, 6409 Texas Highway 349, Midland, Texas, 79706, or St. Jude Children's Research Hospital, 501 St. Jude Place, Memphis, Tennessee, 38105. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Picklin Wells Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences can be made at www.npwelch.com. Michael Solis. Michael Solis, 40, of Midland, passed away on June 18, 2020. A viewing will be held from 8 a.m. to 9 p.m. on Wednesday, June 24th at Nellie Picklin Wells Funeral Home. Funeral services will be held at 4 p.m. Thursday, June 25th at Nellie Picklin Wells Funeral Home Chapel. He is survived by wife Gina Solis, children Michael Solis Jr., Leonidas Solis, Cronus Solis, Jessica Solis, Alejandra Solis, and Robert Solis, mother Gloria Baez, father Simon Solis, and stepmother Tammy Solis, grandmother Maria Baez, brother Stephen Solis, 3 nephews, 6 uncles, and 3 aunts. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Picklin Wells Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Peter J. Fisher. Peter J. Fisher, Jr. passed away on Saturday, June 20th, 2020. The family will receive friends from 4 to 6 p.m. Saturday, June 27th at Nellie Picklin Wells Funeral Home. Peter was born on June 24, 1929, in Albany, Oregon, to Peter and Anna Sheff Fisher. Peter is survived by Marty, brother, Deborah K. Tate, daughter, Dan Fisher, son, 6 grandchildren, 4 great-grandchildren. Peter was preceded in death by his parents, Peter and Anna, 5 brothers, Alex, Adam, Ron, Ed, Lawrence, and sisters Elm, Evelyn, and Rose. In lieu of flowers, given the COVID-19 unemployment fallout, please make donations to your local food banks. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Picklin Wells Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences can be made at www.npwelch.com. Rita Marie Nutter Wheeler. Rita Marie Nutter Wheeler died on April 18, 2020 in Midland, Texas at the age of 94. She was born in Girvan, Texas to Harry Burton Nutter and Sarah Inez Farley Nutter on June 28, 1925. Rita was preceded in death by her husband Floyd, by her daughter Michelle, by her brothers Clifford B. Nutter, Leighton L. Nutter, Warren O. Nutter, and Nathan Nutter, and by her daughter-in-law Pamela Wheeler. She is survived by her son, F. Larry Wheeler of Abilene, Texas, her granddaughter, Mindy Clark Flowers of Aledo, Texas, grandson, Andrew Gina Wheeler of Abilene, Texas, her 4 great-grandchildren, by Patricia Wilkinson, sister of Pamela of Fort Worth, numerous nieces and nephews and their children and spouses. A special thank you to Dr. Gregory Bartha, Dr. James and Mrs. Sharon Humphreys, Linda Harris, and the doctors, nurses, and staff of the village at Manor Park. Memorials may be made to First Presbyterian Church, 800 West Texas Avenue, Midland, Texas, 79701. Grace Presbyterian Church, 2801 North Garfield, Midland, Texas, 79705. The Petroleum Museum, 1500 West Interstate 20, Midland, Texas, or the Presbyterian Children's Home and Services, P.O. Box 140-888, Austin, Texas, 79714. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Picklin Wells Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Death notices. Melvin Scarberry Jr. Melvin Scarberry Jr., 62, of Midland, passed away on Saturday, June 21st, 2020. A funeral service will be held Saturday, June 27th at 10 a.m. at Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home and Chapel. Burial will follow at Serenity Memorial Gardens. He is survived by three brothers, Terry Lee Scarberry, Gregory Allen Scarberry, and Michael James Scarberry. Wallace Tremaine Howell. Wallace Tremaine Howell, age 38, of Midland, Texas, passed away on June 15, 2020. Public visitation will be June 25th from 7 to 8 p.m. at Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home Chapel. Graveside services will be Friday, June 26th at 10 a.m. at Serenity Memorial Gardens. He is survived by his parents, Wallace and Mary Howell, his children, Precious Waits, Timodrius Howell, Tremail Howell, Charmaine Howell, and Trenice Howell, four brothers, two sisters, two grandchildren, and many aunts, uncles, and cousins. Funeral arrangements have been entrusted to Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Odessa American for Wednesday, June 24th. Odessa leader dies at age 83. The story was written by Laura Dennis. Roy Spottiford is being remembered as a man who made a difference in his community through public service. Spottiford died Monday at 83 at Medical Center Hospital following an illness. He was a current Odessa College Board of Trustees member and had previously served as an Odessa City Councilman. Odessa Chamber of Commerce CEO and President Rene Earls praised his hard work for Odessa. Quote, Royce and his wife Helen jumped in feet first when they moved to Odessa from the Panhandle. They quickly sought out ways to get involved and make this community a better place for all. Royce wanted to be part of the solution, Earls wrote in an email. That was evident by his willingness to run for office, serving our city and Odessa College. Rather than sit on the sidelines, Royce rolled up his sleeves and found ways to serve. I will certainly miss his passion for Odessa. End quote. Spottiford was elected unanimously as president of the Odessa College Board of Trustees in 2016. He was on the City Council of Odessa for 9 years and Mayor Pro Tem for 7 years. He has been president on many boards of various organizations in Odessa. His service to Odessa College will be missed, OC President Gregory Williams detailed. Quote, Roy Spottiford will be missed by me and by our community, Williams said. He was a kind soul and he was a gentleman. End quote. Williams, in an email, said Spottiford was a dedicated man, a committed man, and a man who cared deeply about the people of our community, his community. Williams offered his personal thank you and said that every time he saw Spottiford that, quote, he invested something positive into me. He lifted me up, he encouraged me, he offered advice, and he always had high expectations for me and for Odessa College, end quote. Spottiford was a television and radio broadcaster for more than 45 years. He was also radio general manager at KOCV and also hosted a weekly show, West Texas Journal. He continued the show for a long while, even after retirement. He was inducted into the NAFB Hall of Fame in Kansas City, Missouri. Born on a family farm in Millsap, he excelled in FFA, serving as chapter president, Texas FFA as president in 1955, and the National FFA Association as Southern Regional Vice President in 1957 and 1958. Royce married his childhood sweetheart, Helen Hayes, while serving as a National FFA officer. He graduated from West Texas State University with a bachelor's degree in agriculture while working at KGNC Radio and TV in Amarillo from 1959 to 1965. He moved to KEEL Radio in Shreveport, Louisiana in 1965 through 1968, serving as farm service director, before he headed back to Amarillo and KGNC to manage a three-person department. In 1977, Modiford was named general manager at KGNC and strongly supported farm broadcasting and NAFB. In addition to his broadcasting career, he was active in the community, serving as president of the Amarillo School Board, Amarillo Kiwanis, Amarillo Chamber of Commerce, Tri-State Fair Association, and several other civic organizations. In the 1990s, Modiford moved to public broadcasting and became general manager of KOCV TV and radio at Odessa College. He served as president of the Odessa Council for Arts and Humanities, United Way chairman, and Odessa City Councilman for 9 years, and Mayor Pro Tem for 7 years. Hayes's plan rebuffed by court. Hector County Commissioners Tuesday considered Judge Debbie Hayes' appeal for the authority to approve any and all COVID-19-related expenditures from the $2.6 million in federal money the county is receiving and rejected the plan on a 3-1 vote. With Precinct 1 and 4 Commissioners Eddie Shelton and Armando Rodriguez watching on a big screen in the courtroom, Shelton moved to reject the proposal by saying it would amount to giving Hayes a blank check. Hayes said she wouldn't complain if the commissioners disagreed, but that such a move would facilitate handling emergencies without waiting for a semi-monthly regular meeting or calling a special meeting. Precinct 3 Commissioner Dale Childers seconded Shelton's motion, and Precinct 2 Commissioner Greg Simmons voted with him and Shelton to rebuff the plan, while Rodriguez voted no, he said, because he had no problem with it. Auditor Randy Donner reported that the county had so far gotten $520,000 of the CARES Act money. Shelton took part from home in the 10 a.m. session at the county administration building because he said he had been exposed to someone who tested positive for coronavirus, as Rodriguez tuned in from his office in the 1010 East 8th Street building because he said his immune system was vulnerable, he said. In other business, the court heard city officials, including Assistant Fire Chief Joey White, say they plan extensive COVID-19 testing at 8 city parks and buildings this summer and fall. Shelton's motion to give the city $40,000 to help defray its expenses died for lack of a second. Hayes reported summoning the National Guard for a second round of testing July 1st and 2nd at Kellis Turner Park at 2230 Sycamore Drive in West Odessa and the South Ector County Volunteer Fire Department at 4454 West Apple Street. She said the Guard's first round at the County Coliseum suffered from a lack of participation. The court also approved the purchases of aerial surveillance drones for the Sheriff's Office and the Environmental Enforcement Department to curb illegal dumping. The court okayed raising the pay of Health Department epidemiologist Armrinder Kahal from $29.89 to $32.33 per hour, with 100% of the cost to be paid by the state. An epidemiologist deals with the determinants and patterns of health and disease. The court approved a professional services contract for the Ector County Detention Center with the Texas Tech Health Sciences Center, with jail administrator Stephen McNeil saying that the agreement will cover inmates' mental health services. The court agreed to apply for a refund from the Texas Area Agency on Aging for paper goods, masks, hand sanitizers, and other items that Summit Food Service is now having to buy during the pandemic. The court approved auctioning surplus materials from various county departments. The court okayed Environmental Enforcement Director Ricky George's request to let a former county employee buy custom-fitted body armor, with George explaining that the employee had retired and wanted to pay the county $1,200 for the vest. The county approved using the 2020 Help America Vote Act CARES Fund to make COVID-19 preparations for the November 3rd general election. Father, daughter, donate hair. The story was written by Ruth Campbell. Father and daughter Charlie and Kelsey White were feeling somewhat lightheaded after getting their hair cut for children with hair loss Wednesday. Kelsey had thick, strawberry blonde hair to her waist before stylist Shelby Rose of Sophisticuts in Midland clipped it off for the cause. Charlie had equally thick white hair that he had shorn into a buzz cut. Charlie White flies for Summit Aviation in Bozeman, Montana, and lives in Greenwood. Company owner Ben Walton gave him the go-ahead to grow his hair and have it cut for children with hair loss, with the proviso that he send regular photos. About a year ago, Charlie said he looked at Kelsey's hair and thought he could still grow a full head of hair. Quote, "Kelsey's been waiting on me to cut my hair. I'm just right there at the 8-inch mark to have it donated," Charlie said. The Children with Hair Loss Facebook page says it was, quote, "created as a resource for all children who have medically related hair loss. Our goal is to assist as many of these children as possible in changing their lives with improving their outlook and empowering them with a degree of self-confidence that will allow them to face the world with renewed self-esteem," it states. Charlie said he also planned to send a financial donation to the organization. Quote, "Since I was a little kid, I've had long hair. I had one bad bob, and I never had short hair again," Kelsey said. She added that her long hair took about 2 years to grow. Before it was cut, Kelsey said, quote, "I'm so excited. My head hurts all the time," end quote. She said her hair would form dreadlocks naturally. "Now it will be easier to style her hair." She added that she would take about an hour in the shower. Quote, "It feels nice and fluffy again," the 26-year-old said. "Me and him have always had thick hair, and so it's like when my hair was so long, it's just pulling it down. It's so heavy," end quote. Kelsey said her friends were going to freak out because they love her super long hair. Quote, "They all have short hair, so they love my long hair," Kelsey said. "When I come around, they just want to play with it, and I like that. It's fun, but I got to the point where I was hating it, having the super long hair," end quote. Charlie said he was ready to cut it back in mid-May, but it seemed like the growth slowed down. Quote, "This will work out good. It was all meant to be. I just couldn't go another 4 inches. My company was ready for me to cut my hair," Charlie said. Along with Kelsey, Charlie said he and his wife Diana have 2 other children, Charles the oldest, and Bryce, the youngest. COVID-19 news. By the numbers. Ector County confirmed cases, 396. Ector County negative, 4,712 out of 6,055 tested, with 947 pending. 7 deaths. Midland County, 417 confirmed cases, with 13 deaths. Texas, 120,370 confirmed cases with 1,805,642 tested. Total Texas deaths, 2,220. U.S. cases, 2,302,288 total confirmed cases, and 120,333 deaths. Find out more online at co.ector.tx.us or dshs.state.tx.us or the CDC site at tinyurl.com/TZTRJLF. Here are some Odessa American quick hits. Odessa testing. On Tuesday, the Odessa City Council approved a community-wide program for COVID-19 testing. There will be 8 testing events at various city parks between June 30th and July 30th, and another 8 testing events in the fall. 200 tests will be administered at each event. The total cost will be $718,400, which will be paid for with CARES funding. Main Street Unplugged. Basin PBS has scheduled live Main Street Unplugged, a quarterly music series premiering at 7 p.m. Thursday, and will air live from inside the Basin PBS Anwar Family Studio. In keeping with the annual concert theme of Main Street and music, the series will feature local and national music artists showcasing different styles and genres, something for everyone. The first featured artist will be Scott Kirby. Kirby is an accomplished singer, songwriter, and performer, and has been known to take the stage with the likes of Carole King, Jimmy Buffett, Tom Rush, Peter Meyer, and others. For more information on upcoming episodes, visit basinpbs.org or on Facebook, facebook.com/basinpbs.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.